When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You're listening to the Hockey Podcast Network. New shows every day. Find us at thehockeypodcastnetwork.com or wherever you get your podcasts from.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to a very special bonus episode of Red Wings Rant, where tirades and impassioned pleas for your Detroit Red Wings finally have a home. Shout out to my beautiful, wonderful wife. I was trying to figure out how to fit in this interview after this weekend that I'll confess, I'm actually even, this is going to get more confusing because I'm recording this before the Chicago Blackhawks game, after that awful Montreal Canadiens game. So this part right now is being recorded then, but this bonus episode is an interview with Devin Little of the Hockey Writers, and it was one of my favorite conversations I've had about the Detroit Red Wings. I think it's a very good episode for anybody that needs that reminder of maybe that reset of where your head should be at for the season, because we actually came in we got pretty lucky, even with that heckin' horrible game against the Canadians. We kept level heads. We showed some excitement, but we tried to be as realistic as possible with some excitement. And again, remember, it's coming off of those first four games. So I'm recording this now. I don't even know what's going to happen in the Chicago Blackhawks game, but let's just figure out what's going on with that later. At least that's where my head's at right now, and I'm just confusing the fuck out of this right now. But what I wanted to do was still provide you with this amazing conversation with Devin. I hope you guys enjoy it. It'll be a first of its kind. Hopefully we have more, but a bonus episode here. First bonus episode of Red Wings Rant. You get the insight from Devin Little, and I hope you guys enjoy it. He is the Dr. Pepper guzzling, free roaming, stampeding Bronco, hockey writer, Grindline YouTuber, and Grand Rapids' very own Devin Little. Devin, how you doing?
I am doing good. Thanks for having me on. What an intro, by the way.
No problem. I thought I didn't want to just regurgitate the old, you have your hockey writer's profile. I think I found another website has a similar profile. I gotta goose it up a little bit, right? Gotta put the old goose suit onto the intro.
As long as you got Dr. Pepper and Broncos, you pretty much got it.
Well, as listeners know, when I do have guests on, I like to jump into the icebreakers. So this will kind of get us outside of the Red Wings. There's still some hockey options here. But here's what we do, Devin. I've got three categories for you. And I gave you a bit of an intro on Twitter, so I don't want you to feel any pressure, because you're going to hear one that's going to relate to exactly what I DM'd you about. But no pressure. Pick whichever one you like. But the three icebreaker categories are EA Sports Hockey, Spooky Season, and Beer City USA.
Oh, jeez. I feel like Jeopardy, and I've got a good round. you know what? Let's do the first one. Let's talk some video games.
All right. So I'm taking this in a little bit of a different direction, because I did see in your article about Tyler Bertuzzi, you referenced Trapped and Headstrong.
Yes.
So I wanted to throw this out there. What band, artist will forever be associated with your own personal playlist because of EA Sports?
Oh, geez. I guess the first one that comes to mind, I always go back to NHL 05, yeah. And Franz Ferdinand with Take Me Out. Yes. Such a classic. So yeah, that song definitely sticks out. And whenever I hear that at a game, I like have like flashbacks of being like 10 on my bed playing that game. And then another one, I guess, would be, I think it was like NHL 10 through 11. They randomly went back and did some oldies. They did like Sandstorm and Zombie Nation. So yeah, those songs for sure.
No, that's a really good one. I still remember going through like senior year world history class and the Archduke Franz Ferdinand came up and I was like, I know that guy. Yeah, I
remember that guy. Yeah.
my hot ones here were Queens of the Stone Age, which I think I'm pretty sure they were featured in like the first NHL game that had like a soundtrack. Airborne, because I'm just I've been an Aussie metalhead for a while. And underrated, I feel, Foxy Shazam. Bye-bye Symphony, Burn. That one's going to stick with me forever. This one's probably easy. I'll just throw this one out there because this question didn't take too much thought to come up with. But where are you guzzling barrels of suds if you're in Beer City, USA?
Where am I guzzling barrels of suds? to be honest, I don't really have like a go-to place. I feel like I should probably get one of those. I kind of just, if you happen to be touring around Grand Rapids, you might see me at this place or that place. I like to hit up Pepino's for dinner. I like to hit up, I'm drawing blanks right now, but yeah, you might see me around. I don't really have a staple.
Yeah, my answer to this was embarrassing because I've had people ask me before and I just go, well, there's a Hopcat right next to
your
arena. So just head over there. They'll have everything in the area and you just, you know, enjoy some fries.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Well, yeah, thanks for letting me pick your brain there. But I also love doing this too. So anybody that does writing, I confessed in our last interview that I see myself as like a pseudo journalist, and the main game is podcasting. But I saw that you graduated with a degree in creative writing. So I want to know, and this is probably what brings me to your writing on the Hockey Writers website. How do you bring that, because there's obviously a difference between like a journalistic style and what the idea of creative writing is. So there's going to be a couple of questions I want to throw at you with this, but from the start, how do you feel like you infuse what you've learned to do, your creative writing style, into what I, for lack of a better phrase is, or maybe lack of a better term, is just you doing sports journalism?
Sure. Yeah. I should start by saying that I started out as a journalism major, and I switched programs because I didn't like Western's journalism program. So, don't know if that's a shout out to my alma mater or not, but once you decide that you're going to do something like this, and by the time I was into my creative writing, degree, I started to write for the school newspaper, and believe it or not, I didn't write for sports. I wrote for the arts and entertainment section, and that is where I really kind of learned the basics of journalism that I needed to like have to do this type of thing. And it just goes to show that like you don't have to be writing about sports to like figure that stuff out. Ever since I was little, I was someone who just liked to write things my own way, even if there was like a sort of template for how things wanted to look. If I thought something needed to be written a certain way, in my mind, that's how I was going to do it. Assignment be damned. So I guess what I do is every article, every topic, every, you know, however you want to look at it, can be approached multiple different ways. I think you can write things to make it sound like it's coming straight out of a newspaper. Sometimes you can write things to make it look like it's coming straight out of like not a novel, but like a piece of nonfiction, you know? And it's all about what, I guess, people would enjoy to read. I think sometimes you just got to write out the facts and that's your story. And sometimes you got to have fun with it. And I think when you do, when you can come at it from a creative writing perspective, you kind of, I don't mean to say it this harshly, but you're not as much of a slave to the convections that you have to follow. Gotcha. When you're, you know, you're stuck to like the journalism thing. I feel a lot more free to do things how I see fit with how, where I'm coming from, I guess.
Is there something that you would like to see be like more mainstream in sports journalism to like just make your day that much easier? Like, I think like, just for an example, you probably go through like Down Goes Brown has some pretty crazy stuff. So maybe even that, probably now that I think about it, skews even closer to sports journalism. There's a lot of research that goes into that.
Oh, yeah,
and he has a fun read, but that might be in the opposite side of the spectrum. But yeah, still, same question. Even though I fucked up the example.
The main thing that honestly I would like to see more, and I am starting to see it here and there, but it's still not necessarily mainstream, is just the writer inserting themselves into the piece. It's still kind of relatively frowned upon to write "I" in your pieces. I think this, I did this, blah, blah, blah. And I think, you know, in certain cases, yeah, you shouldn't do that. But I think that a lot of writers out there draw an audience, and that audience comes back for that writer, not necessarily the thing that they're writing. You know, I look at, you know, Max Boltman, it doesn't matter what that guy's writing about. It's got his name on it, so people are going to read it. So if he writes "I" in it, they don't care. I want to, you know, I would like to think that I could be in a position where if, you know, if people see my name on the byline, they're going to jump on it because I'm there. And so when you have the freedom to insert yourself into the piece, you can kind of make it more personal. You can really kind of establish that what you're saying is coming from you and not from, you know, an external source or whatever. And it makes things more, I guess, unique, and it makes things harder to plagiarize when you are able to inject yourself into what you're writing.
Yeah, I mean, to that point, you could read the same story, you know, I don't want to toss any names out there, but I get what you mean with a huge difference. And I'm going to do it. I'm going to throw somebody under the bus here, but huge difference between like Ansar Khan and Max Boltman. I'll play that game. It's probably a mean game to play, but,
but I mean, you're not wrong though. There's a big difference between the two.
Right. And Max comes out with an article, that was probably either yesterday or 2 days ago, that is actually titled, I believe, it was "Things I Know and Things I Believe About the Detroit Red Wings So Far." And he's so bold, he threw it right in the title. He's using "I" all over the place.
Exactly.
But yeah, you get that Max Boltman flavor in that. And it's more than just a regurgitation of stats. It's more than just a regurgitation of press conference, you know, quotes. Yep. Here's what's said, and here's, you know, if you take a modicum of, you know, time, I guess, just to try and dissect it, here's what it could mean, and here's what they want you to think, kind of ideas. And I couldn't agree more. It's how I get into my conspiracy theories with the Detroit Red Wings. Like, it can be dangerous. I'm the bad side of that. I'm the one that comes up with, well, wait, why was nobody around watching Verona get hurt? What happened there? He just all of a sudden he's gone for 4 months. What's going on there? You know, I joking aside, don't want to put you in an uncomfortable position there, but that's where my craziness comes from. And thankfully there's people that actually enjoy that. But but yeah, I appreciate you letting me dive into that, the old creative writing side of things. And yeah, I say everything you're saying there is probably why I have you on the show now compared to, I mean, there's so many people out there I could get thoughts and ideas. But I appreciate that you've chosen to go with Devin's style. I'll say that because that's what keeps me coming back.
Thank you. I don't know any other styles.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so I sent you, we'll jump into the Red Wings stuff here, if I can, I'll put in my mind here the stamp on when we started doing this part of the conversation. I threw out in the DMs here, I didn't want this to come off as like, I didn't want to put you on the spot, and it's not too difficult of a question, but I did want to get like, you know, I wanted to give you more time than just off the top of your head to think about it. But give me two answers here. One analytics based, or, you know, maybe a pulling back just from the narrative side a little bit. But again, to go in the opposite direction, one narrative based, one analytics based. What's going right so far with the Red Wings, in your opinion?
We'll start with the narrative aspect. And again, like we all know, it's early, so we can't really draw super fine conclusions at this point. But early returns suggests that the Iser plan is working. Sider and Raymond have been among Detroit's best players since the get-go of this season. And those are, you know, Sider was the very first guy Iserman drafted, and Raymond was the highest guy he's drafted. I want to take a step back too. Like, we all kind of figured Sider was going to make the team. We didn't necessarily know Raymond was going to make the team. And for them both to be making such a big impact right away it bodes well. They're both under 21 years old, so they've got a lot of room to grow, and they're already making this big of an impact. So for the first two guys, at least in the first round, that Eisenman has drafted to make this kind of impact, you got to feel good about guys like Edvinson and Kosa coming up, and then whoever else is coming in the next year or two. And then analytically based, I did do a little bit of homework. At least according to Natural Stat Trick, the Red Wings as a team have an expected goals for percentage of 55.26, which means that they expect to get over 55% of the goals so far through four games this season. I can't remember the last time the Red Wings as a team had a positive expected goals for percentage. Now, a lot of that is based on a really good game against Columbus, a really good game against Vancouver, and then a crazy game against Tampa Bay. This past game against Calgary was not as forgiving. but the point is that they are getting the bigger share of the scoring chances. They're getting they're expected to get more goals than their opponents. And I think the fact that they still have technically a positive record is proof of it.
Yeah, and I would say, there's also a narrative to attach and an analytics number to attach to both sides of those conversation pieces, too. Because you would say, too, Sider, Raymond, probably we make this discussion point of, when was the last time we had an expected goals for a percentage above 50? And then you also just turn around and go, well, we also have easily our best defenseman and best forward we've seen in the last few years. Uh-huh. But then with the, you know, meeting that number, you got to think, and this wasn't necessarily anything I prepped you for, so I'm going to play this game, but you got to think, Jeffy boy, Jeffy Blash, we'll call him, I'll stick with Jeffy. He's got to be letting go of the reins a little bit when he sees the talent level that's in front of him. Because we know, right? I want to get your thoughts on this, because I've been going pretty hard on this since the season has started. Because even with that Tampa Bay game and we go down in a loss, clearly, to me, there was a change in how much we were going to play the let's limit chances. And now it's just, all right, these boys can play. I'm going to let them do a little bit more here. I'm gonna let Mo Sider be Mo Sider. I'm gonna let Lucas Raymond be Lucas Raymond. That's where I make that attachment of what is the story behind us getting at least from the 5-on-5 perspective, at least from the analytics perspective, how did we get to that point? Is Jeffy boy making the right choices for his talent?
Come on, Jeffrey, you can do it. my big thing with this is it's crazy what happens when you inject talent onto a team. Yeah. I mean, quite literally. Last year, I think I don't know if I'm in the minority on this or not, but I think that the Red Wings played a system that fit their team. I realized that it wasn't the most fun thing to watch, and they struggled to score, and there were plenty of issues going on there, but they weren't oozing with talent. They, you know, you can't go toe to toe with Tampa Bay and go chance for chance when you, when your best player is, sorry, number 71, but when your best player is Dylan Larkin, you can't go toe to toe with Tampa Bay. Right. So you got to play a system that allows you to at least stay in the game with Tampa Bay. And that's what they did last year. So then this year when they add, you know, Lucas Raymond and Moritz Seider, and let's not overlook Nick Leddy and Pia Suter, the team has more talent. The team can do a bit more. We saw in the very first game against literally the Tampa Bay Lightning that they can go chance for chance now.
Tyler's what, 80% shooting percentage?
I mean, that's not sustainable. And Vasilevsky had an off game, and there's a lot of other things going on there. But I don't know that you would have seen that game last season. Like you said, to set this up, they were playing a lot looser than they were at any point last season.
Yeah, and I have gone as far to say, you know, does Dan Bylsma's power play look as awful as it did if he had a Lucas Raymond in a morning session? Because I'm starting to move towards the side of the conversation that while it's impossible to actually measure besides like Stanley Cups and wins, I'm starting to think the margin between, you know, maybe your best coach and your worst coach is eyeball test worthy, but like everybody in the middle, how razor thin could that margin really be? Because I'm sure, like, some of the stuff we saw in the preseason where Lucas Raymond is whipping him across the ice over to Larkin for, you know, an easy goal over the shoulder for, you know, a nameless goalie in the back of my head. Was Dan Bylsma really saying don't do that? Or did he just lack the talent to have that done? And I'm not saying bring back Dan Bylsma. I'm not taking anything away from Tanguay. But I think there's more to be said for the fact that the talent level is moving in the right direction than what the coaching did or didn't do. Because to your point, I think we all at the beginning of the, we'll call it the 2021 season, we all said, if we're going to find any success, we've got to limit chances both ways. And we got to just cross our fingers in the third period. Yeah. Red Wings do it. And then we all kind of went, you know, wow, this is boring, but we knew it was coming. So it shouldn't have been a shock. It should have just been like, all right, yeah, Jeff wants to try and keep his job. He's going to do the only thing that could probably work with this group. Shouldn't have been as controversial, I think, that he even kept his job, to be completely honest. But
I agree.
Yeah, I feel like the podcasters, the writers like yourself, podcaster and writer like yourself, I feel like we came at it with a more realistic expectation. And then it's just, we got to get the fans on board. We got to let them see, like, I'm not saying, you know, Jeffy Boy's not going to be around when we're winning Stanley Cups. I think that's clear. Seems to be a regular timeline for these types of teams. Probably the best way, if you were a fan of the Detroit Pistons when they won in 2004, I mean, we're going to be looking for our Larry Brown eventually, no matter how well Rick Carlisle coached the team.
Yeah.
So that's coming. But in the meantime, you know, it's more about seeing these guys just not look like dog shit. And, you know, I still wonder, and I want to get your opinion on this, how important it is for these guys to just gel. If it was last season doing, you know, the strategy of limiting chances, but finding wins. Like, I think there's a lot to be said for having a team go into the locker room and celebrating a victory for development's sake, as opposed to just getting run over when you are lacking that talent.
Yeah. I'm a big opponent of tanking, regardless of who's at the top of the draft. I literally don't care, because I feel like once you adopt that mindset, it is very hard to get out of. All you have to do is look at the Buffalo Sabres to find out what happens. Even the Edmonton Oilers, they got Connor McDavid and they still haven't made it past the second round in a long time. And they've got Leon Draisaitl there too. Like they, it's not a talent problem at that point. So for me, yeah, it's about putting yourself in a position to not get run over, like you said, because that's deflating, that's defeating. It's really hard. You know, you can only take so many 6-1 losses before you just you unplug the controller and you stop caring. You need to stay engaged. And the way to stay engaged is to either win games or lose close games. So, you know, I don't care if the Red Wings go 0-82, but if every single 82 all the 82 losses are 2-1, that means they were in all 82 games, and they just got to figure out how to get those two extra goals. Now, obviously, 0-82 is crazy, and that's a hypothetical. But yeah, case in point here, I would much rather see the team build those moral victories, get those wins when they can get them, and even get those tough losses when they can get them, because I think that is stuff that you can build on. That puts you in a position to move forward and grow, not just as individuals, but as a team. Losing and losing badly, I mean, you don't even have to like look at it from a sports perspective. If you've ever played any sort of board game, if you get killed, it's not fun. You don't want to play again. Like,
that's a wonderful point.
If it's a close game, then you want to play again right then and there. Like, yep. you know, there you go.
Well, I mean, unless your brother's being an asshole like that.
Well, that's a whole separate thing, but.
No, that's a great point. That'll probably be one I'm going to steal and use over and over this season, or at least continue in the Jeff Blashill conversation. Because clearly, you know, we make that point now, but we've also both agreed that we're moving away from that limit strategy. Now, this interview or our conversation is going to be confusing because this is going to come out after we play a weekend of hockey. So there's going to be a lot that happens between our conversation right now and a Saturday and Sunday game, which we could come out of this weekend and just be over the moon, despite the fact it's Montreal and Chicago. Or we could come out of this weekend and just be completely deflated because it's Montreal and Chicago. Uh-huh. So I guess what I want to get from you is, you know, where's your head going to be at, your best estimate, the best case scenario and worst case scenario, because it's got to be something where people can hear this at that point and either calm themselves down or, you know, not get too bogged down from maybe two losses where we see two teams that are shooting like 2% right now and eventually the levee's going to break. Yep. So, yep. The law of averages will come into play for both of these teams eventually. And, you know, we've seen it happen in the past. So, yeah, basically, if I could reestablish where I want you to go here, keep us on a level head of where the expectation needs to be in your mind for Red Wings fans and just anybody, just casual observers as well. If anybody wants to take a shit on us, you know, tell them shut the fuck up.
Well, first of all, shut up.
All right.
Second of all, there are a couple of things at play here. It's not just as simple as they're playing Montreal and Chicago this weekend. They're playing Montreal in Montreal the first night, meaning Tyler Bertuzzi is not going to be in the lineup. And he's been a very big piece for them to start the season. And they're going to plug in Carter Rowney probably into the lineup. Maybe a seventh defenseman. We don't know.
That's what I was wondering too. If it was going to be, I mean, here we are. People are going to hear this and they already know.
But either way, whoever they plug in, it's not going to replace Tyler Bertuzzi.
50% as of right now, still 50% shooter.
Yeah. Who knows? Maybe Troy Stetcher will get in there and score 50%. I don't know. But so to expect the exact same level of play against Montreal would probably be, I would probably pump the brakes a little bit. Now, mind you, I do think that they do have a chance in that game. They still have a lot of good. I mean, they're only missing Bertuzzi. It's not like they're missing Larkin and Bertuzzi.
Right.
And, you know, like we've already established, Montreal hasn't won a game yet. So we'll see. And then the next day, so it's a back-to-back, right? They're going to play against Chicago, which we'll see what happens between now and then. But I got to think that their coach is going to be desperate to get a win, because he's probably feeling, if people think Jeff Blash was on the hot seat, that dude's in hell right now. Because this team should not be, what, 0-4-1 or whatever to start the season. That team should have had a victory by now.
I mean, they're making the trades in the offseason. You pull it. However you want to talk about goaltending, and I am one that shies away from saying, you know, it's the most important player you should have on your team. Definitely, you know, in my mind, don't want to spend too much on a goaltender. It could change game to game. But for whatever reason, Chicago went all in on goaltender, all in on a Seth Jones, and they're not seeing the return right now. So that's something. Oh boy.
So they're feeling the heat, and they're playing against the Red Wings, which is, you know, obviously a big rival for them. So if they're ever looking for an opportunity to get a win, I mean, a win against the Red Wings will help them. I mean, it would feel good for them. And the Red Wings are coming off a game the previous night. So I wouldn't be surprised if they lose that Chicago game, just because of all of that I just laid out there. Now, I guess to actually answer the question of where am I setting expectations for everybody, the Red Wings should not get killed in two games this weekend. They should be, at the very, very least, they should be in both games. Ideally, you'd want to see them win both. I think realistically, I'm guessing they split the two. I think they win against Montreal, and I think they lose against Chicago. There's also an element of who starts in net. We don't know that yet. Grice has been playing really well to start the season. Ned, I don't think he's been playing bad per se, but he hasn't settled in yet. I think that's pretty clear. So depending on who plays against who, we could see that play a factor as well.
I do want to jump on. I saw yourself and the hockey writers have been putting out some content in regards to Nedeljkovic. I don't get it. The hate, especially after we get shut out, where the fingers pointed at Ned, and it was, you know, let's say Ned gets a shutout. Where the fuck are we at that point? It's still 0-0. We're headed to a shootout. But I wanted to come to that, because I was one that I actually thought, because of the back-to-back, we were going to see Grice last night. And again, we know it wouldn't have made a difference, because fucking shut out. I do think there's probably, for the same opportunity there was for you there, to discuss like where the head should be at for Red Wings fans for wins or losses this weekend. I think absolutely everybody should kind of have a similar mindset for Nedeljkovic in regards to, let's not overreact. It's always been my mentality is you can celebrate, you could go to the moon when something good happens. Don't overthink it. But something bad happens, or something negative. I shouldn't even, like, Nedeljkovic hasn't even really been bad. Something negative happens in regards to your players, your team, coaching staff. That's where you got to really step back and go deeper into the numbers before you give any sort of maybe just reaction, thought, hot take. But right now, I don't know why, but a popular hot take is that Ned's playing like shit, and I just don't see it. He turned in a .930 save percentage last night too, so I don't. I really don't understand where people are coming from. But I guess this is more or less, this is less about let's talk about Ned's game, and more about maybe we talk about generally the frustrations of trying to discuss any pro sport, really anything you love, and see a negative reaction, and like the kind of thing that can kind of snowball into. And I'll throw this out there. I don't know if you're a Star Wars fan, but I'm pretty sure The Rise of Skywalker sucked because of the fan base. So I'll throw that out.
Agreed.
There, all right, cool beans. So yeah, give your thoughts on maybe frustration, or I know, because we can, you know, on Twitter, the easiest thing to do is just for me to tell someone like, dude, calm down. Yeah. Take a deep breath. Rethink where your head's at. But yeah, how do you feel that's affecting your job? Maybe how that's affecting maybe how hard you might go in one direction for being a fan of one player. Because I know I'll before I let you answer, I'm really excited about Gustav Lindstrom and the start for him so far. Think about a third pair of defensemen, you know, and what you should expect for that player. And I think he's producing above that. But I got turd sandwiches coming in and reminding me that it's only been 3 or 4 games, so not to be excited about it. Now, granted, there's a lot of truth to that, but, you know, let's have some fun, number one.
Yeah, yeah.
And number two, when it comes to taking a dump on our players, maybe we wait until it's actually, like, time to do that.
Yeah.
All that. Yeah. You get this huge bowl of gumbo of thoughts from me. Where do you want to go with it?
Some good-ass gumbo. First of all, if you're somebody who's ragging on somebody for being excited about a third pair defenseman, find something else to do, because come on, third pair defenseman. Here's the thing. Fans overreact in both directions. That's what they do. You know, it wasn't too long ago that Kirill Tichayev was going to be the next Kirill Kaprizov. But then also it wasn't, you know, here we are now and Alex Nedeljkovic is the second coming of Jimmy Howard. So, I don't blame fans for overreacting, because part of being a fan is, you know, living in the highs and the lows, you know?
Yeah.
But I do think, that there definitely needs to be an effort to pump the brakes on things like this. Because Nets played two regular season games with the Red Wings. That is not a sample size worth taking anything out of.
Right.
And even then, like, I don't even think the numbers 100% tell the story, because I think he played real well against Tampa Bay, and then the team kind of just took their foot off the gas.
Yeah, you lose to Dylan Larkin.
I mean, literally,
in that game. Yeah,
I said this before. Larkin stays in that game, they probably do. They probably win that game.
Right.
Yeah,
I'm on board with that.
So, I guess, like I said, it's inevitable. I'm not going to lose too much sleep over people trashing Ned, because as soon as Ned pitches a shutout and then has a great game after that, his jersey is going to be flying off the racks. I mean, it's literally what happens. But like I said, like you've said, it's too soon to pretend like we've seen anything meaningful yet.
Right.
Like, to kind of like put this in a perspective, you know, Jonathan Bernier, we've all talked about how great he was over the past like two seasons with the Red Wings before he moved on. His first season in Detroit, he was average at best. Jimmy Howard was the better of the two goalies that season. Grice, this past season, his first half of the season was not pretty. And then he came around and finished very strong. I am firmly in the boat that Alex Nedeljkovic is going to take some time to get settled into his new surroundings. He just came from a team that was arguably the best defensive team in the league with the Carolina Hurricanes. Right. And now he's playing against a team that regularly allows 30-plus shots a game. There's going to be an adjustment there. There's people he's never met before. There's that play in the Tampa Bay game where somebody called for him to leave the puck or whatever, and there's a miscommunication there.
Yeah, Stolly boy.
Yep. That stuff happens when you haven't kind of established that rhythm and that chemistry with your teammates. That will come with time. Nedeljkovic signed a 2-year contract. He's not here for 1 year. So yeah,
he'll learn to know to ignore Mark Stahl with time.
Exactly. I mean, the dude was a Calder finalist last year for a reason. He didn't like that. I realize that hot streaks happen, but I refuse to believe that was just like some crazy streak. I think he's got the goods to be a really good goaltender in this league, and he's just got to find his footing in Detroit first.
And you know what? The other part of this too is people are taking it so far, but they're forgetting that how young he is.
Yep.
The tiny little contract. I would argue the draft pick we gave up, the chances of that landing and being an NHL player. Like, when you take a look at how often that level of draft pick turns into an NHL player.
Minuscule.
It's a pretty small percentage.
Yeah.
So you get an NHL player for a draft pick. That's huge. So the risk there is so small. And his contract will be up in case, you know, it's a short term. So if this does end up being a mistake, which I doubt it, but this is still like a no-lose situation.
Yeah.
So, this is really the call to action for everybody to kind of really, you know, reassess the situation. Number one, he played pretty great last night. There's no qualms about that at all. But number two, even if this turns sour, like nothing about this could go wrong for us. We're still not winning the Stanley Cup this year. So
yeah.
we get to watch. I've made the argument as a member of the Hockey Podcast Network. This show has had the privilege of recording, and you guys have the privilege as well with the hockey writers and the Grindline. You have the privilege of recording the easiest team to analyze. Because nothing can really go wrong. Like, if we lose a lot, then we're still discussing the draft most of the year and trying to get to know all those prospects anyway. And if we win a lot, what the fuck just happened? It's all great.
We get to have fun.
Exactly. Everything is just, I mean, going back to, you know, the initial question I asked you, like, this is everything. This is, we'll do a Dark Knight reference here, right? It's all according to the plan, the Iser plan. Like, we are supposed to lose. We're supposed to see these little tiny increases of production. And we were supposed to see first round picks in the top 10 that looked like NHL players. So far, so good.
Here we go.
this is a gravy. This is a gravy job. Podcast on the Detroit Red Wings. This is about as easy as it gets. I remember in the offseason bringing up the point that, we could actually just go back to the preseason and the difficulty some folks had with giving up on Bobby Ryan and not giving him a new contract. And it's like, that's still small potatoes, but like, that's the thing, like, we can't wait for, you know, like to make those decisions where it's like, fuck, which again, I'm not going to say Bobby Ryan was fuck, but some people did. And we're at this point right now where whatever happens is still, it's fine. It's fine.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Now, we've just played the game, right? Of everybody needs to calm down. But I saw earlier on your Twitter account, I would say maybe within the last week, you made a play at putting together a lineup if Jakub Vrána was here.
I did.
No, I don't want to get too deep into what that lineup would be, but I do want to play the game that if everything stayed the same, because who knows if Lucas Raymond makes the team if Ron is here. And I firmly believe that even with the same performance from Lucas, or you know what? Scratch that. Does he get the same opportunities in the preseason if Ron is there? We don't even know. I'll put that out there. So anyway, let's say Lucas makes the team. All that's the same. And Verona's here. Based on what we've seen, and this is where we're going in the opposite direction. Based on what we've seen through four games, do you think that we're sniffing the playoffs with a full season of Verona?
This season?
Yes.
Ooh. I mean, it's hard for me to say because let's put it out there to start. I mean, Vrana was electric when he came to Detroit last season. I think there's the biggest reason why everyone was so bummed out about his shoulder thing is because, you know, we're like, oh my gosh, the Red Wings are going to have a 30 goal scorer all of a sudden. This is crazy. But we don't know that would have carried over. We don't know that he would have continued that. I highly doubt he would have carried over that same pace. He was scoring at like a 50 goal pace or something like that.
Oh yeah. No doubt that wasn't happening again.
So to expect, you know, that those 11 games of Rana to carry over, you know, pump the brakes a bit, but yeah. I hesitate.
I see it in there. I see the sparkle in your eye.
Yeah, yeah. I hesitate to say no. That's the thing. Like,
that's a great answer.
Yeah, I wouldn't say. I guess that's the best way to put it. I'm not going to say yes confidently because I think this is. I mean, at that point, you're looking at the defense and you're saying okay, but you still have you know, Danny DeKeyser in your top four, probably shouldn't be there. And you have your best defenseman is probably a 20-year-old rookie. It's not ideal. So then you still have issues. And then, you know, Nedeljkovic is getting settled in. So there's still issues at play here. But I do think that to kind of steal a phrase that Coach Blasio likes to throw out there, I think that with this lineup plus Jake Vrana, the Red Wings could theoretically outscore some of their problems. And it just depends on, you know, who's playing with who, who's playing in what role, if Vrana can carry over what he did last year, is Lucas Raymond on the team, like you said. There's a lot of ifs and whats and maybes, but yeah, I guess my answer is I hesitate to say no.
I'll put it this way, too. If we're, I don't want to say a bubble team because that seems thinking really high, but I mean, if we're Jesus, yeah. How do you tiptoe around this? My own question. Let's say the points percentage is like 450, right? So that's about sure. Roundabout where we did like the second half of last season. Maybe actually the second half was closer to like 490. And Verana's coming back. I would say that's at least something. So that puts us in like that probably 11th seed, maybe 10th seed. I think when Verana comes back, if we were at that point, I think that would be something to sit forward and kind of scooch to the edge of your seat.
Yeah,
I'll put it that way. That's something to at least go, all right, there might be a chance here. Now, that also means that we just played more than half a season and Lucas Raymond played pretty good. You know, all of that meant that things kind of kept playing along the same line that they're playing right now. But yeah, I'll put it that way. If Verona comes back and we're like sniffing that the 500 points percentage, that's where, yeah, you scooch forward. Now, better question. Do I think we're going to be sniffing 500 points percentage? No, not really. But, you know, it's going to be... we'll know when we get to February, right? I'll say this too. Nobody wants to hear this, but I'll let it out that I don't think we're going to see Verana this season. I think it'll get to a point where things are so far out of hand, and maybe I'm putting on the conspiracy theory hat here. I think it'll get out of hand where we don't even need to see him. You know, it's not like he's going to come save us. And if anything, maybe he comes back with like a month to go and things are severely out of hand. But that would be, I might even put money on that we don't even see Verana this season. But I don't want to get anybody, you know, I don't want to damper hopes too much, but that's kind of where my head's at. I see what happened last season. I don't think they're in the position right now that they need to rush anybody back. I think it's pretty evident so far, and I'm not saying because Tyler Bertuzzi was held back for so long and because they kept everything so quiet that's why he's shooting 50%. I'm saying he looks like an NHL player. He doesn't really look like the injury is holding him back at all, and I think it's got something to do with how careful they were with Bertuzzi.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I'll put it that way, and I think they probably want to do the same thing with Verana.
I actually think you might be onto something there. And I think something that is maybe going a little overlooked is that the Vrana injury was reported that he is out a minimum of four months. It's not 4 months exactly. It's a minimum. He might be gone longer.
And I can see the conspiracy theory hat just forming.
Yes,
a little.
Yes. This isn't a Red Wings hat. Yeah, it's a tin foil. And that's, you make a good point. If there's going to come a point where you have to weigh your pros and cons of whether it's even worth it, because, you know, if this was a team that was looking to make a playoff push, then yeah, you want to add Vrana because he's going to help. He's basically a trade deadline addition at that point. But given where this team is supposed to be, I think you'd rather just make sure that Vrana is healthy and good to go for next season than to get another 15 games out of him this season.
Right. I mean, next season, you're potentially talking about DeKaiser being replaced with this Simon Edvinson that I saw it today on Twitter. Somebody said it perfectly. It looks like he's a slice of butter on a hot pan right now. We played the game last year of like trying to fit Cider on the team. And it's like, he could literally replace anybody on this team and it's going to look loads better. Yeah. I think we get to play that same game next year, especially with, that DeKaiser contract. I think you just kind of eat it. You get through this season, you're good to go. But I mean, that next season is, you know, let's kind of plan ahead for that and kind of just eat this one. And it sucks. But I still think, you know, that still goes along the lines of that attitude of like, nothing can go wrong this season. Nothing can go wrong.
I'm a firm believer that this season is kind of the last like true rebuild year. And by that, I mean, you know, dealing with bad contracts and dealing people away to add picks and prospects and really, I guess, tearing down and looking towards the future. I think next season, because you will be adding more young kids, maybe Edvinson, and you know, guys like Raymond and Cider will be getting better, is when you start not focusing as much on what you can trade away and what you start to focus more on what you can bring in to push yourself further along. I'm not predicting playoffs next year, but I am predicting another leap forward next year, and we'll see where that takes the team.
Well, yeah, it would be three straight years of a step forward, and there's only so much room between the basement and playoffs at that point.
Some point, so, you hit that final step. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. And when we draft Shane Wright, we're good to go.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, great point, Devin. I do think too, like this year and this draft is kind of lining up that there's going to be some pretty good options where the Red Wings will get to play like that New York Rangers game. Obviously, they, you know, got to play with Lafreniere, so the names and the value from each player will be different. But I think they'll have a lot of opportunities to bring in a guy that they can fit into the roster next year. A lot of luck comes into play with that, but with it being more than one name, I'm optimistic that not only are we going to be bringing more guys in that are just coming through the system, we can just throw names out of the hat that are coming from the Griffins, but I do think there's some real potential out of this upcoming draft. And then the thing that we always forget is that Tampa, to me, wasn't that world beater until Yzerman had his way with the trade block and bringing in, you know, pretty much filling out that defense for Tampa Bay and solidifying it through the draft. And of course, he didn't even draft Hedman, but you know, you got some pretty key pieces in place, but then he really shored everything up through trades. And I think when we start seeing, like when we stop looking at a Nick Leddy trade and the response is, oh, he'll be good for Cider to learn with, and instead the response is, holy fuck, can you believe Cider and so-and-so are going to be playing together? When that becomes the conversation, I think we're good to go. And I would agree with you too that it that trade, maybe not exactly a left defenseman to play with Cider, but that trade is on the horizon. It's got to be within a year or two that we see something juicy like that. Now, Devin, I'm very guilty all the time of forgetting to give everybody an opportunity to tell the good listeners, the folks, where to find you. So I got to make sure I do that right now. And then, you know, any final thoughts you have for the Wingdings, keeping in mind, this will be post, Chicago and Montreal.
Well, first and foremost, follow me over on Twitter, at Hockey with Devin, Devin with an I, and then also, you know, we talked about my stuff over at the Hockey Writers, so go check that out. By the time this drops, I believe I'll have a new episode of the Hockey Writers Grindline out. Might want to check that out over on YouTube or wherever you listen to your podcasts. And then, final, I guess, thoughts for the old Wingdings. I'm really excited. Maybe I'm living off the high of these first few games, but I'm actually really excited to see what this team does this year, because, I expected this team to take a step forward with adding Sider and then adding Raymond, but I wasn't expecting the amount of fun I've had watching this team play over the first four games. Not only are they creating chances and playing what looks like winning hockey, but they've got that snarl and bite to them that I haven't seen in a long time. I think when teams are willing to go into the trenches and maybe throw a punch for each other, I think that shows that you've got a good mix and you've got a team that is actually a team and wants to do good things. It's one thing if you're a bunch of bullies and you're going 10-72, but I don't think this team has that. I think this team's gonna, the days of the 2019-20 Red Wings are long gone. And I think that fans all across Hockey Town are very excited about it, and they should be.
That was beautiful, Devin. I appreciate you coming on.
Thank
you. It appears that the Red Wings content creators are learning from the Red Wings and their camaraderie, and we are all, it appears, so excited about this season. We're all coming together and helping each other out. So, again, I can't thank you enough for coming on. And this is a great conversation. I hope everybody sees exactly why I tune in for the Devin articles, because it was very, I don't think we disagreed once this entire time. Great for podcasting, by the way. I should have come in hard with the Nedeljkovic and the man, we're a playoff team. What are you talking about?
We'll have to try again sometime. I'm sure we'll find something.
Well, I'll let you get back to your day. And everybody, thanks again for tuning in.
Thank you so much.